If you have not been listening to the latest EPP bonus episodes of Real Ghost Stories Online, you don't know what you're missing.
It was so real to me. I could smell him. He was there. And I woke up and it was like he had just left.
GhostPodcast.com is where you sign up to be an EPP, extra podcast person, to get exclusive access to our once a week bonus episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.
I felt heavy and freaked out. Someone was most definitely watching me.
Complete with exclusive content only for EPP members.
They thought they were mistaken. The house wasn't there. They got out of the truck and stood looking at a large, unattended hayfield.
EPP bonus video, only for EPP members.
And I'm like, what kind of sign are you looking for if that's not a sign?
Sign up now at GhostPodcast.com or sign up through Patreon. The link is at GhostPodcast.com. I wanted to hear the answer to, did they find bodies underneath the building?
I did too. I was just sure she was going to say, and then they found bodies.
If you want to hear the best ghost stories we have, along with our regular funny and non-judgmental commentary, become an EPP.
This is a pond created by a giant off rock of the United States. I'm going to guess the translation there is.
Sign up now at GhostPodcast.com. It's only $5 a month, or you can sign up for an entire year. Get 1 month free out of that and a bonus bunk bed bell, so you can ring along at home. Keep Real Ghost Stories Online alive and be part of our exclusive EPP community.
This is Real Ghost Stories Online. It is our live edition. We do it every single Wednesday afternoon on Facebook. If you're joining us live, the phone lines are open, 216-446-7810. The phone number to call in to join us live as you are watching us. My phone just flew across the room. As I'm doing this thing live, I'm doing it through YouTube as well, and I was trying to adjust the camera of YouTube, and it went a flying, but there we go. Join us live for the episode. Call in, and let's talk ghosts this afternoon on Real Ghost Stories Online.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802, or write in at RealGhostStoriesOnline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is. Looking for your ghost stories live this afternoon as we do this show. 216-446-7810, 216-GHOST-10. Our number for the live editions of the program, that phone number does not work on the non-live editions. It's only for the hour that we do this thing live. So if you're listening to this in the podcast form, do not dial into that number. Use our other 855-853-4802 to call in a ghost story outside of the hours of this program. I have a announcement that I want to make about Real Ghost Stories Online, about EPPs, and an extra thing that I have, I don't want to say like just decided. It's been something that's been running through my mind for a while, and logistically, I didn't know if it could be done in terms of bandwidth and storage of audio. It's a big, I'm not going to go into the big technical thing for you because it'll bore you to death. But I wanted to see if there was a way that I could post advanced episodes of Real Ghost Stories Online for EPPs over to Ghost Podcast and let everybody get in on that and listen to the episodes before they are released. I thought that would be another kind of cool perk in addition to the regular EPP episodes for EPPs. So I did a little messing around with that today, and it was just one of those things where I really wanted to do it, so I did it. Now EPPs have access to all of the episodes in advance of their public release. So episodes, for example, are recorded essentially right now, I think through, I believe, not this next Monday, but the following Monday. Those are now posted. If you're an EPP, you can listen to all those episodes at ghostpodcast.com or through Patreon as well. So wherever you are tuned into the program, that's the place you can get advanced episodes of the show, in addition to, of course, all the EPP content. So it's one extra kind of cool thing I wanted to get out there for everybody to enjoy and to listen to with the program. So enjoy going forward. As we make them, they will be there. Some weeks they'll be more than others. Some weeks they'll be less, depending on what's going on. But it's just another little extra there for you. Phone lines are open right now, everybody. 216-446-7810 to share your ghost stories with us. My voice is not the greatest today. I'm getting over a cold. I'm going to take a sip of water. And hopefully my voice doesn't die as we do the program. But 216-GHOST-10, phone line is completely open to share your ghost story with us as we do this live. I know we're an hour early today. I probably threw everybody off of their schedule for doing this. Normally we do it at 4 o'clock Central, and we'll go back to that again next week. But like I said, I wanted to get this in today before the kids are getting off the bus for school. First day of school, I know. So dial it in, 216-446-7810 to share your real ghost stories with us. Would absolutely love to hear them. Let's go to this caller. Hi, you are on the air.
Hi there, my name's Selena. I'm calling in from Calgary, Alberta in Canada. I called in to tell another story, and depending on if that one's been aired or not, but I won't interconnect my story, so it's confusing. So I have another story to tell, and this one is regarding an apartment that I lived in when I was a kid in Toronto. Toronto, Ontario, in Canada, that is. And the story that I have to tell is about my parents. And I was too young to remember this fully, although I do remember glimpses of it. Like, just when I say glimpses, I mean I remember little bits and bits of the story itself, because I was living in the apartment with my parents when this happened. So I was around, I think I barely just turned 4, really. And what I do remember of the night that the story took place is that I went to Woodbine Center in Toronto. And in Woodbine Center, they have a fantasy fair on the second floor. And that's practically like a little fair where you can bring your kids and you can get face paint and they have little rides. And I loved going there. So I remember coming home that night and I had my face painted and I was going to go to bed. And my parents were going to go to bed. Now, my mom had this black nightgown that she wore all the time, every night to bed. It was her favorite. And I remember getting ready to go to bed. I was brushing my teeth, and my parents are causing a bustle in their room. And I go into their room, and from what my mom tells me, she told me, she was like, "Selena, do you know where my nightgown is?" And I said, "No, I'm 4 years old. I didn't need her nightgown," right? And my mother always would place her nightgown before she left to go out flat on her side of the bed and laid out, so she would just put it on when she got home. And she did this the night that we ended up going to the fantasy fair. But when she came home, it was not there on her bed where she had left it. So that's why my parents were causing a bustle. They were searching the entire room for this thing. And it got to the point where, because my mom is a very superstitious person, she ended up tearing apart the apartment. Not because she was mad or because she was angry, but because for some reason she had this itch that she wasn't going to be able to find it. And then she's going to find it out of nowhere in, like, the next week or something. Because the apartment that we lived in, we knew that it had paranormal activity because we had experienced it. So my mom was going crazy, tearing apart the entire apartment. It was to the part where she took apart her IKEA bed to see, oh, maybe it fell in between the cracks of the bed where the mattress and the bed frame meet. And they took apart the bed. They took apart everything. They could not find this nightgown. And mind you, my mother wore that every night, strategically, every day. She'd lay it out on her bed until she came home at night to put it back on. And, yeah. Anyways, after hours, I think they went to bed around 11 o'clock. And mind you, we had gotten home at, like, 9. So that's quite a bit of searching, 2 hours tearing apart the entire apartment. we ended up just going to sleep. My mom just called it a night. And she figured that it would spontaneously turn up out of nowhere, like stuff we usually did in the house, because we had experienced paranormal activity before. And so that night, right after the whole ruckus of tearing apart everything in the house, looking for the nightgown, when my parents were in bed, they weren't sleeping. They were just talking to each other. And my mom, and I believe this is a story because we haven't talked about this story in a long time, but my mom told me that she started talking about one of my recently passed uncles at the time. More so her uncle, my great uncle, so my grandfather's brother. He had just recently passed, and my mom was talking about this with my dad while they were in bed, the same night that we had just torn apart the apartment looking for the nightgown. And as soon as she starts to talk about my recently deceased uncle, my mom feels a pressure on her chest. And my mom took her hand out from under the blanket. Mind you, the room was completely dark because they were about to go to sleep. And my mom puts her hand on the blanket on top of her chest and feels the silk of her nightgown. And that's when she says to my dad, "Turn on the light. I think it's on me." My dad got up, turned on their bedroom light, and the nightgown was laid out perfectly on top of my mother's body, on top of the blanket where she was sleeping. And growing up, that story has always gone to me, mainly because it's the one that I really remember the most out of all the paranormal life that we had in that apartment. And it really resonates with me because I don't believe this was something malicious like I believed it was in my other paranormal experiences, because I have had a lot of negative experiences in that apartment, but I believe that this was positive, because the minute my mother started talking about a beloved family member of ours that had just passed, the nightgown of hers was returned to her. And I feel like it probably maybe was that loved one of ours, my uncle that had just passed. So I see it as a positive experience, and I'm happy that it was. It did turn out that way, and yeah, my mom got her nightgown back, and it's a story that she still tells to me and my siblings, you know, whenever we talk about paranormal activity and whatever, because it's something that we do in our family. But yeah, I love you guys' podcast, and I hope that this gets aired. Keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing that story. And that is really one of those things where objects that seem to disappear and then come back. That to me is one of the more inquisitive moments in ghosts and the activity that they have. It makes you wonder. I just wonder about the object itself. Does the object disappear, like physically disappear and then reappear? Is it, you know, slid away into some crevice and then comes back? How exactly is that happening? That's one of those things that I wonder about, especially when it's physical objects of ours that come back, not something from another time and place. Caller at 518, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Judy, and I'm calling from New York.
Hey, welcome to the show.
Hey. you actually played my one story a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
Where I had the partially translucent shower curtain.
Were you what?
I had the partially translucent shower curtain.
Okay.
And as Sean was correct, I do not have that anymore.
I remember that. Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah, no, we got rid of that.
Nothing like just kind of seeing a weird, unexplained shadow coming up around the translucent shower curtain, and you can't quite tell what it is. That's like something out of a horror movie, you know?
It wasn't fun.
Yeah, I can't imagine it would have been.
So I actually had something happen to me just the other day.
Okay, let's hear it.
So I was on my way to work, and I ended up going a completely different way than I normally would because a bridge was closed. So I happened to pass this house, and I don't know why, but I really like old farmhouses. Mm-hmm. And I was telling my husband, I was like, oh my God, I love this house. It's beautiful. It's like my dream house. So I really didn't think too much of it. I went to work, but I was thinking about the house all day. enough so to where I actually drove by it on my way home, and which is something I normally wouldn't do, but I don't know. So I stopped, and I was like, man, I really like this house. And I pulled into the driveway just to see if it was a foreclosure because it looked a bit run down.
Sure.
And I didn't really see anything. You know, a lot of the windows were boarded up, like so were the doors. I was looking for a foreclosure sign because my husband and I are actually looking for a house.
Okay.
And I was like, I can't really see anything, but I got like this really creepy feeling that I was being watched. And, you know, I stopped and I just took a picture of the front of the house so I could show my husband because I couldn't find a road sign anywhere or a number of the house. There was no mailbox. There was nothing.
And let me ask you, I'm going to assume as you're painting this picture here, there was like no car in the driveway. There was no one there, right?
No, there was nothing. Like the grass was like severely overgrown. Even the front porch is like falling off the front of the house.
So we're talking just, this is like the farmhouse from Americana pictures that's been forgotten and is just sitting there rotting, essentially.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, leave me to be attracted to the creepy house.
Sounds awesome.
So, I'm like, I really love this house. It's beautiful. You know, with some TLC, it could be a great house. I have a huge yard for the kids.
Yeah.
Mind you, I'm like super paranoid about everything, like about being axe murdered randomly. So it was like super out of the ordinary for me to even stop in the first place. And I was telling my husband about it. I was like, you know, I was there for maybe 3 minutes and I got like this really creepy feeling that I was being watched like the whole time. And so I was there long enough to look at the side of the side door just to see if maybe they didn't put a foreclosure sign on the front because, you know, the porch is falling off.
Sure.
But I didn't see anything, so I just took a quick picture, and I left. So I get home, and I was telling my husband about it, and he's like, wait, you did what? I was like, yeah, I know, not, you know, the best thing. He's like, babe, this is how all horror movies start. Maybe, but okay. So I would go to show him the picture that I took, and he zoomed in, and there was a face in the window.
There was a what in the window?
A face.
A face in the window.
Yep. Like, you couldn't see all of it, but you could definitely make out, like, the top of the head, a forehead, eyes, definitely a bridge of a nose.
So it was very distinctive. Now that being said, that you saw the face in the window of this house that you loved, is the love of the house still there, or is this kind of like a bridge too far now?
You know, I still really like the house. I'm good.
So you'd still be good with considering
it. I'm drawn to those sorts of things anyway.
Okay.
You know, so.
So you would still be good with considering it.
The apartment that we live in now is creepy. We have creepy guy is what I call him.
If it were for sale and you're able to get in on this property, you're good with it.
Yeah, no. I don't need any help. I grew up in a haunted house. I live in a haunted apartment now.
Then you're good.
I don't need that.
it's just normal life is all it is. It would probably abnormal if it wasn't haunted.
Yeah, I would be all over it if, you know, there hadn't been the face in the window. Right. And I can't really explain it. I just felt like I had a really bad feeling of being watched, like, the whole time I was there. And I was only there for, like, 2 minutes. Huh.
Now, how about your husband? Is he cool with the idea of a house like that?
A haunted one?
Yeah, a haunted one.
Oh, no.
Okay.
He's like, no.
So there you go. Deal breaker.
He told me, he's like, this isn't even an option anymore. Like, yeah,
well, there you go. Yeah, both parties do have to be in on it. I don't think you're going to find a compromise on that. I was like, well, if we do daily exorcisms, honey, maybe we can get it. Yeah, I don't think you're going to find a happy middle ground on that. That's creepy.
My daughter already talks to a guy who lives in the ceiling, so I don't think we need to like actively look for property that has, you know,
I would
body people there.
Do you still have the photo?
My dad does. I actually was so creeped out, I just took it off my phone. I'm okay. Like, I don't want any part of this house. Like, I am so good.
Can you send me, can you get a copy of that and send it to me? I really would love to see it, and we may use it at, like, in an upcoming episode of Seeing Ghosts.
I can ask my dad for the photo back.
That'd be great. I'd really appreciate it if you could email it to me. It's tony@realghoststoriesonline.com.
Yes, for sure. And I have some more, and I'll call back on another Wednesday.
But... That'd be great. I love your stories. Thank you for calling in today.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Bye. Phone number, 216-446-7810. Caller at 760. We'll get to you next. Caller in front of you is at area code 215. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Tony. It's Joe Stang from sunny South Philadelphia.
Hey, Joe. Welcome to the show. And before I hear your story, I just want to let everyone know or ask everyone if they can to please press share on this because I've not said that yet. As usual, we do on the Wednesday afternoons is everyone who shares, it sounds like you're wrestling cats, everyone who shares the program here on Facebook today. It's like an old person. The program. Everyone who shares is going to be in the drawing for an autographed copy of the book, which I'll pick and send out after the program. If you want in on that, just press share. It lets other folks know who like our show that we are, in fact, live because Facebook, it changes their algorithms all the time. And the only way that other people who like the show know that we're live is if it gets those rhythms of people pressing share. So please do that, and someone will get a copy of the book. So, okay, Joe, let's hear your story.
All right. My father passed away in end of April 2016.
Okay.
After an 8-year battle with cancer. It was October of last year. I was at work, and he always used to tell me, I'm an electrician, and he always used to tell me the three C's that kill electricians are cocky, confidence, and complacency. And I always had it in the back of my head, but naturally I let that slip. And I was on the phone FaceTiming with my younger sister because she had taken her kids to Disney for a family vacation. And her son wanted to FaceTime me while they were waiting in line for a ride. And we were just, you know, joking around about how, like, recently we've been seeing Dad or hearing something about him, smelling him, things along those lines. Then my nephew was just telling me about his ride that he was waiting to get on. And I told her I had to go because I was wiring lights in the ceiling, and it probably wasn't best that I'd be on the phone. So I, you know, ended the call, got down, and at this point, I had wired probably 14, 15 lights throughout the morning, and I got up on the ladder, and since I knew it was the same circuit prior, I didn't think to take out my tester and check because I knew it was dead. I was cocky. I was confident it was dead. And I had been complacent in my work. And the next thing you know, I was hung up on 277, about 10, 15 foot in the air, give or take, depending on what part of the body you measured. And I couldn't let go. I was stuck because the wire was hot. And it did have a current running through it. So I couldn't let go. And I look up in front of me above the ceiling. I saw my father's face and I heard him say, jump. So I jumped backwards and the wire got stuck in the ceiling, ripped out of my hands. And I managed to land on my hands and knees instead of on my back. And if I had landed on my back, I would have landed on a pile of sheet metal that had been ripped out of the one wall the day before and had been sitting right behind where I was. And I was a little shaken up, and I called my sister right away to tell her what happened because I was, 5 minutes ago, I was on the phone with her. Everything was happy-go-lucky, and we were laughing. And she said that her husband was just in one of the restrooms, and when he went to wash his hands, he could have sworn he saw an identical tattoo on the left hand that my father used to have of a butterfly that him and all his shipmates from the Navy had all went out and got one day. And that was with, you know, like a minute prior, she sees his hand, or he had saw his hand. And then the next thing you know, I saw him in the ceiling telling me to jump because there was no other way for me to let go of the wire. And ever since then, I carry like two or three testers on me. And, you know, that's the, you know, the, it's weird because there was no one else in the ceiling with me. And there was no one else that would have heard me if I hadn't let go. You know, I couldn't let scream or anything because I had 277 volts running through my body.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was weird because it was so vivid. That was just like, I don't know if you remember prior when I told you about the hag lady that lives in my aunt's house that's very brazen, calls me the stubborn boy.
Okay.
But I saw him clear as day, as if I'm looking at my, you know, another person in everyday conversation. He, you know, when he had passed, he had been battling cancer. So when he finally went, you know, his face was real sunken in and he had almost no hair left. And when I saw him, he looked just like the same guy he had always been prior to, you know, the last like, couple years of his life. And it was just, it was cool, but it definitely reminded me the hard way to always test the wires, whether I know they're off or not.
Yeah. And it's an interesting thing. I mean, my guess with that would be that he's probably still there. He's probably sitting there.
Oh, yeah.
And he's watching you, and he's you know, however this works, this whole thing of when we die and loved ones that end up watching over us, you know, it's almost like, I think sometimes we're assigned to someone. Sometimes it's a dad, sometimes it's an uncle, sometimes it's a friend, sometimes it's a whatever. But it sounds like you got
right.
Your dad is the one that was assigned to you, and he's there, and he's, you know, he's watching, and he's doing what he can, you know, for you on the other side, and he's ready with that advice, just as he was when he was alive. But what an interesting story. I always wonder with electricians. Electricity scares me. I've educated myself enough where I can put my own lights in and stuff. But I got my testers. I'm always testing everything left and right. But I'm not good enough where I can like run wire from anything to you know, put new outlets
right.
in. So I always have an electrician come in for that. And I have a good company that does that. But I'm always wondering because they're not testing much half the time. They leave the circuits on half the time, and they're like, "I can handle this." It's like,
right? Yeah.
Why do they do that?
Told me about. Yeah, that's the one thing he always says: cocky, confident,
yeah.
And complacency. And unfortunately, it kills. Yeah. If not the electrician, you know, God forbid, it could kill somebody else. And it,
yeah.
I mean, realistically. A receptacle in your home, if it catches you across the heart, could kill you.
Sure.
And that's only 120 volts.
Yeah.
So on that particular day, the guys I worked with reminded me that I managed to defy two odds, my head being above 10 foot on a fall backwards and getting hit across the chest with 277 volts.
Yeah.
So I definitely dodged the bullet that day. Thanks to him.
Yeah.
And it's not the voltage that kills you, it's the amperage.
Yeah.
And there's a whole science behind electricity, and luckily there wasn't much on the load, so I was able to, you know, snap out of it as soon as I let go. And but
yeah.
You know, it could have been so much worse. I mean, guys unfortunately passed on 277 almost instantly half the time. So It definitely not something that I should have. It was definitely my own fault.
Sure.
You know.
Well, I'm sure it's a lesson you will never ever forget as well. So.
Oh no, I have testers in the house. I have testers in the car.
Yeah.
I have testers in my kids' rooms. Everyone has a tester in my house now.
That's good. That's good. Well, thank you for calling in and sharing that story with us today. We really do appreciate it.
And I have plenty more for stories of my dad that I'll write into you, and
yeah,
we'll hopefully hear it on another show.
I'd love to hear more or call back again another Wednesday afternoon, because we always love hearing your calls.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right.
Have a good one.
You take care. Phone number is 216-446-7810.
I tried calling you just a minute ago, but I was trying to send the voice call. I don't know if it actually deleted. But just from the beginning, let me retell my story here. And it's almost not, I mean, it is a story, but all this stuff has actually happened to me. Growing up, when I was about 20, 21 years old, I moved in out of my parents' house in a small town in Colorado called Canyon City. Canyon City, Colorado is a small town that's filled with nothing but prisons, pretty much, dating all the way from, you know, the 1800s and on. But there's a lot of old prisons in that town. I'm talking about the Supermax there. But there's a lot of old history in that town. It's an old western town. They got the Royal Guard, the tallest suspension bridge in the world. Anyway, I moved out of my house where I was living out with my mom into my buddy Joe's house. We took over the house he was living in because his mom moved out, and we decided to just pick up all the utilities and stuff like that. And it was a big experience for us because we were on our own technically. You know, we kind of turned the house into a little like bachelor pad pretty much. We already graduated high school. You know, we were just starting college. We're hanging out, partying a lot. But right behind our backyard of this house is this big old church called the Abbey, the Holy Cross Abbey. And, you know, very old. They have a lot of wine fields in the back of it where they've always produced wine. And this church was built in the early 1900s by the KKK in Canyon City, Colorado. And ever since then, you know, monks used to be there, and they used to do a lot of church stuff, making wine, of course. Well, one time, me and my girlfriend at the time were leaving the house. When we got to the car, we had realized that we had the house. So we decided to go back into the house. And when we did, all of our kitchen chairs were lined up at the foot of the couch in the living room in a perfectly straight line. And, you know, when we opened the door, we were the only ones there. We just got struck with this big old feeling of, you know, cold. And darkness kind of like hit us, slap in the face. And keep in mind, it was in December, and it was 26 degrees out, probably, and it was snowing outside, you know. And it was very eerie, and everything was just lined up, so we shut the door real quick and got out of there. Well, my buddy Joe ended up coming home at some time like that, and when I got back home, I asked him if he saw the chairs, how they were lined up with the couch. And he said no, because he just said he hadn't heard anything. But he did say earlier that day he was hearing stuff moving around in the house. So, you know, we kind of disregarded it, didn't think much on it. But a few nights later, I had the day off from work, so I was sitting at home. And in the middle of the house, we have these clear French doors, and there were some blinds in there, you know, kind of just, there was like an extra bedroom. It was pretty big. There was like an old fireplace in there, but it was separated by these French doors. And I was sitting there in my bedroom watching TV, and I heard some stuff moving around again. So, you know, I got up and looked, and the blinds that were on those doors were open just a little bit, and you could see the silhouette of something moving back there. There was one light left on in that room, a little lamp that we had in the back corner. And so I opened the door real quick, and immediately when I did, the light turned off. So it was very eerie. I shut the door, you know, went outside, you know, kind of just caught my breath up a little bit, you know. And, you know, after then, I kind of knew, hey, I need to start keeping my head open for weird stuff going on, because it just seems to be happening a lot. Well, around Christmas, my family came over because, again, they didn't know where I was living. Well, they knew where I was living, but they never been. So I had to invite them over for the first time. And, you know, then this was real creepy because, like I said, Kansas City is an old inmate town. Prisons date back to, you know, the early 1900s then, you know. And my mom had said that she saw someone walking around the house. You know, and it kind of freaked me out a little bit. Because the houses were pretty close to each other in the neighborhood, but they weren't so close that, you know, a neighbor should be in your yard walking around. It was very suspicious. But my brother-in-law at the time, we were all sitting there in the living room, and we saw something. I don't know who saw it first, but we looked through the kitchen window, and there was just an old, like, inmate-looking man staring through the kitchen window, looking directly at us. And you could see his breath on the window, moving back and forth because of how cold it was outside. So, like I was saying, my brother-in-law at the time jumped straight up and ran out the back door to where, and the kitchen window was right by the back door. And there was no one there, and when we looked, you could see footprints leading to our back door, or to the back kitchen window, from the field is where they were make wine and stuff. And, you know, it was just very eerie because we had all seen him at that time. And you always got a weird feeling in that house. You know, that house, every light could be on in the house. And, you know, you just have the feeling that you're being stuck in the dark there. Very old. But I did some research at the community college where I was attending there. And our house right there was the only house in around the church, the abbey at the time when it was built. And I guess after speaking to Joe, which was my roommate's mother, who resided in the house for many years, told us that she always had strange occurrences there. And we got some information leading to, well, back in the day, our house at the time was one of the main, not a priest, but one of the workers at the church lived there and helped ran the field. And I guess prison inmates would, you know, they'd have to come to the field for the day to work. And, you know, that house right there is where, you know, the warden and prison guards were coming in and out a lot of that house. And they would stay there on the guards. Some of the guards would stay there overnight while they overlooked workers. And it was just very eerie knowing that that house was at all. And you can even tell because I guess it's been renovated since then. But it got, after hearing that about the workers working in that field and that house being what it is and the meaning behind that house, very eerie. And ever since all that stuff has happened to me, I feel like something's kind of been attached to me since then. You know, I live several states away now. I live in South Alabama. This happened 4 or 5 years ago. Never was a firm believer of paranormal activity until all this started happening. But since then, to this day, I still get strange occurrences that happen. I stay out of town for work a lot, and I'll be in a hotel quite often. And I'll just feel like something's watching me, and I don't know if it's the hotel that I'm at, something's there. Even when I'm at home sometimes, I get strange stuff that happens. So I didn't know if you could give me some info on what y'all think is going on, or kind of just if I'm going crazy or not. Thank you.
You're not going crazy. I'd say that first of all. I think what you're dealing with is a property that has just so much emotional energy attached to it. From everything, I mean, I've lost track of the amount of things that you said were going on with the property, all the way down to Klans members being there, to so many other things that were not positive, that were not good, that were not, you know, in any way, you know, something where it's like a warm, happy energy. But it sounds like there was a lot of things that went on there. When you have those sort of things, you know, you certainly, with anything, the door seems to be open for an intelligent haunting to go on. But when you have a lot of negative energy on a property or a place, the door opens up even wider than I think to residual energy that's negative, that can easily repeat itself, can replay itself, and then kind of infest the living that are there, that are just, you know, trying to live their lives. You were feeling it, and you were identifying it for what it was, which is good, because I think sometimes there's places where there's a lot of negative energy infesting it, and folks don't necessarily jump into the world or the thought process of, oh, there's something odd going on here. They almost just kind of let it envelop them and then almost repeat or become part of whatever that energy is or was. So you're not going crazy. It just sounds like there's a lot of stuff, for lack of a better term, that went on there at that property. Thank you for calling in and sharing that story with us. Got time for about one more call. We can either do a live one, or I have another one ready to go if you want to get in on it. I'll give you a second, 216-446-7810, to share that or to call in. It's a cold. I'm saying wrong words at wrong times to share, to call in and share your story with us. And please do, if you want in on the chance to win an autographed copy of our book, please do press share on this on Facebook, and we will be picking somebody at the end of the episode off the air, and I'll reach out to you and get your address and all that and ship it out to you. So press share if you want to be in on that that drawing. I'm trying to watch the feed over here because I know there's a bit of a delay between me talking and you saying this. So 216-446-7810 to share your real ghost stories with us here live today. I'm sorry I threw everybody off today by going a bit early on the episode, but such is life on some things. Let's go to the caller. Hi, you are on the air.
Hi, Toby and Jenny. My name is Tiffany. I'm calling from Iowa. I wanted to share one of the more recent spooky stories that I have with you. Let me just start out by saying that I have had paranormal experiences for pretty much my whole life. They do frighten me, though, so I try to kind of ignore them. My dad is actually kind of a paranormal investigator on the side. He's always been interested in it, and his side of the family has always been pretty open to it. So I always share my experiences with my dad. And actually, I was telling him when I was about 19, I was telling him something strange that had happened to me while I was living with my grandparents. And he actually suggested that things might be attracted to me. And I, of course, told him, you know, I was ridiculous. You know, no, Dad, that's crazy. You've experienced things. My brother's experienced things. You know, we've all had these experiences. And my brother happened to be there, and he looks over and says, you know, Tiff, since you moved out, you know, these things don't happen to me anymore. So the day that a light bulb went off, and I realized that might actually be attracted to me. So anyway, this story takes place in October of 2016. I had just gotten married about 2 weeks prior to my high school sweetheart. So things were really good at that time. We had lived in our house for a little over a year. Before that, the house was owned by my uncle for about 15 years. We never had anything strange happen there. My husband was going on his annual hunting trips, and it was going to be my first time alone in the house. So he was gone, and I went out to dinner with my mom. I came home around 9 o'clock, and you know, nothing out of the ordinary. I left some lights on for me. I had a big dog, you know, I was putting some wires in my fridge, and it was making a lot of noise. And the way that our house was set up, I had my back to the, door that went to the basement, and the door was open, and we had there was a couple stairs, and then there was a side door to the outside, and then there were stairs down to the creepy dark basement. We heard this really loud bang come from the basement. It sounded like we had this metal cabinet down there, and it sounded like that fell over, and I, you know, startled me, so I jumped, and I turned around, and I saw my cat sitting there, and I'd assumed that it was him that had knocked it over, you know, jumped on it or something, and he was sitting there waiting for me to feed him. So it, you know, kind of startled me. And then I heard these very loud, very distinct footsteps coming up our stairs. And it really scared me. There's a very distinct noise when somebody's walking up these stairs. The house was built in the 40s. The stairs are really old and creaky. So I'm like, oh my God, someone's in my house. And we had a 4-foot gate between our kitchen and our living room, because we had a big dog, and I was fumbling with the gate, and I was shaking, and I was trying to open the gate, and I could hear these footsteps coming up the stairs, and I looked down, and my dog is about 2 feet away from the gate, and he is all the way down on the ground, his head's down, he's growling, and he's snarling, and the hair on his spine is standing up, and of course, you know, scares me even more. And I run out of the house and I'm getting ready to call the police. And I just have this kind of sense of relief when I get outside. And I realize that nothing's in my house. I look and I can see into our windows that were over the sink in the kitchen. You could see down into the landing. And the only way for someone to get out of the basement is to come up those stairs and go out that side door, or you'd have to walk past the windows to go out the front door. And there was no way anybody could have come out. Just on the safe side, though, I did call my brother, who happened to be a block away with me and his friend. He came over and went through the house. Of course, like I suspected, no one was there. My door was locked. All my windows were fine. You know, he checked everything. So I was a little nervous, and I went and stayed with my grandparents for the remainder of my husband's hunting trip. My husband's always been kind of a skeptic. I mean, he believes if he sees it, but other than that, he's always got a logical explanation for everything. So I told him about it. And he said, you're just nervous, you know, it was a cat, whatever. You're not used to being home alone. I'm like, okay. So a few days later, we were getting ready for bed. We were laying down and, you know, we're trying to go to sleep. And my dog, he started growling, like really low and soft. And I kind of nudged him and I thought, okay, well, he's just, you know, he's dreaming and, you know, making noise in his sleep. But then we heard, it sounded like a door slam, like our side door slammed shut. And then we were shuffling, like feet, like somebody was shuffling around in our living room, which is right outside of our bedroom. My husband is jumps up and he grabs his gun and he says, you know, Tiff, go out to the neighbor's house right now, call the police. Well, I kind of had a suspicion that no one was in the house. I knew I had deadbolted the door. I went over and the neighbor, he came out and he went over to our house and he checked and our doors were all locked. You know, they were all deadbolted, locked from the inside. They went through the house and, you know, of course, nobody was there. So my husband and I were standing in the kitchen after the neighbor and him had gone through the house and they were certain that no one was in the house. And my husband and I were kind of talking about it and he said, well, you know, I've got a long day tomorrow, so I'm going to go to bed. My husband was like, okay. Well, then I heard that bang again. You know, we heard this, what sounded like the filing cabinet in the basement falling over. And he grabs his gun and he runs downstairs, you know, expecting to find the person that's been hiding in our basement, of course, and there is nothing. And he comes upstairs and he's like, nothing's out of place. I don't understand. You know, I definitely heard that. And I said, well, you know, that's exactly what happened to me the other day. So anyways, you know, I'm going to bed, you know, have a good night. So, you know, he's visibly shaken up by that, but, and we went to bed and, you know, after that, I was pretty nervous about being in the house by myself. My husband was a college student. He worked full time, so he's gone a lot. But on Wednesday nights, he was gone until about 10 o'clock. So I was a little bit apprehensive about being alone. I would invite my mom over on Wednesday nights, and I would cook her dinner, and she would stay with me until my husband got home. We'd watch Law & Order or whatever. So my mom and I were sitting out on the couch in my living room. And I could see that, you know, out of the corner of my eye, I saw these things go flying off my refrigerator in the kitchen. And I turn and I look, and there's like, you know, I had like a Brita water filter pitcher thing. And it was, you know, that was on the floor, and those plastic cereal boxes and just all kinds of random things were like all over my floor in my kitchen. It was like the entire top of my refrigerator had been cleared off. My mom is staring at it, and of course she's, you know, she goes, oh my God, what was that? I had gotten a kitten just a, you know, a couple of days before that. And they said, oh, you know, it's the cat. Like, I've caught her doing that a few times. She like knocks things off. It's so irritating. And my mom turns and she looks at me, and I've never seen this look on her face before. She was completely terrified. She's, you know, her face like is drained of color. And she says, no, the cat, she's right here. And I look, and sure enough, kitten's curled up in a ball, you know, sleeping on my mom. And about 10 minutes later, my mom's like, well, you know, I've got an early day tomorrow, so I'm going to get going. And she left me there all alone for like about the next hour. Of course, I was a little bit nervous, but, you know, nothing else happened. I told my husband about it. And I said, you know, if anything's here, you need to go. You're not welcome. You need to leave. You're scaring people. You're scaring me. I don't like it. And nothing strange happened since then. I think that you guys are kind of right. Jenny, I've heard you say this on your show before. if you ask a lot of things to leave, they leave. If you don't speak them out, I think they kind of leave you alone for the most part. As I've gotten older, I kind of quit watching horror movies. I, of course, still listen to your podcast because I love it. I love hearing everybody's stories, but I definitely don't go on any ghost hunts or anything like that anymore. I'm too scared of bringing it home with me. But I just thought I would share that with you guys. Thank you so much. I love your show.
Thanks for sharing that story with us. I'm guessing after this incident, your husband probably wasn't so skeptical, hopefully, of your experiences after that. Now that he kind of had a little taste of it himself, that would be my guess, my hope, anyway. Thanks for calling in and sharing that. That wraps up today's episode of the program. If you like our show, become an EPP extra podcast person on our website at ghostpodcast.com. You get every single bonus episode of the show, all the EPP episodes, brand new ones every single week, and advanced episodes of the show. As we make them, they are posted, so you get stuff weeks before it goes public, exclusive video content, and more. Ghostpodcast.com. It's $5 a month to get all that stuff. You can even go through Patreon. The link is there at ghostpodcast.com. Until next time, thank you for watching another episode. Or listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.